Enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com. I'm HRN Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're focusing on water. You'll hear some disturbing news from an NYC investigative reporter.
Here lies the problem, how much we don't know about water tanks.
Katie Kiefer reports on water woes in the heartland.
Their water is heavily polluted with nitrates, which are coming from agricultural chemical applications on fields and running off into their water table.
And we'll check in with Dave Arnold, who's about to open a new bar that will serve some pretty fancy H2O.
It is hardcore.
So pour up a tall glass of ice water and be refreshed by this week's episode of Meat in 3, available on heritageradionetwork.org, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Heritage Radio Network on Tour. I'm HRN Executive Director Katie Mosman-Wadler, and I'm very excited to have a special guest in studio in Roberta's with me today. Today, my guest is Michael Landgarten. He's the owner of Bob's Clam Hut in Kittery, Maine, and soon to open in Portland, Maine. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's completely my pleasure. Thank you.
And you're fresh off the plane, as I understand, post Roberta's Pizza.
It was a little bumpy. And so I was really happy to have the best pizza I've ever eaten to settle my stomach, and it was a delight.
Amazing. Yeah. A glowing endorsement.
Oh, loved it long before I got to be on the radio here. So.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much, and welcome back to Bushwick. We're happy to have you here. And today I'm excited to talk to you about a number of things, but first and foremost, you are the proprietor of a restaurant that was really a staple of my childhood and really part of my hometown experience in Maine, Bob's Clam Hut, which is right on the Kittery Mall. If anyone's been driving up Route 1 in Maine, surely you've seen it and smelled it, and hopefully you've eaten there. But it's definitely a pilgrimage site. It's a historic business. I'd love if you could give the background about Bob's. When did it begin, and sort of what's the ethos, and what does it look like and smell like?
You'll probably have to stop me because I'm still completely in love. In fact, more enamored with this magical, you know, genesis and how it's evolved. So Bob Kraft, same spelling as the Patriots owner, but nothing like him. And not that I just, you know, just not that I know Bob Kraft, the Patriots owner, but I knew Bob Kraft, the Bob's founder. He grew up in a house, a little ranch house with three brothers and sisters. One sister and another brother, and his parents in a tiny house that was really between Bob's and the Kittery Trading Post, which was quite small at the time. And that house sat right on Route 1. I mean, you know, steps from the road. And he asked his mom for a piece of the backyard. After, you know, he was about 30 at the time, so he had driven a cab and worked construction in New Jersey to make it through winters. He had an injury, so he didn't serve in the war, so he was, you know, stateside. And but he mastered frying clams at a young age because he would dig fried clams in Spruce Creek, which has really rich clam flats right where Bob's sits. Mm. And those clam flats have been closed for a number of years, although that waterway just got a healthy grade, so there's been a great cleanup of it, so we're pretty excited about that. They haven't opened up the digging yet. So Bob dug clams and fried them up, and at some point he got a job cooking in Portsmouth right over the river at a place called Hovey's, where there's still a restaurant but not a Hovey's. And he was cooking in the back, and this is Bob telling me the story early on. And the owner came in back, and so he got an order for fried clams, and he saw their recipe, and he wanted nothing to do with it. He disapproved. Bob did.
Uh-huh.
So he cooked them his way, and the owner came storming in the back, and Bob figured that was the end of his career at Hovey's. And the owner said, who made these clams? And Bob said, I did. And the guy said, the best clams I ever had.
Wow.
Don't ever change that. You know, so what Bob was doing, he had a vision, he had an inspiration, he had decided how it was done, and he was a student. He went to a place called Ells that had opened in 1945, That's in Ogunquit, where I actually had the pleasure of going. There were lines down Route 1 for elves. It's no longer there. So he studied what she did, and he developed his own approach, which is outrageously simple. And he really wanted the clam to be the star, because he knew that the fresher the clam, all you had to do was basically dredge it and fry it in ultra-clean oil and no salt, no pepper, nothing to mask that incredible flavor. There's nothing like a clam. It's sort of like there's nothing like an oyster. There are certain foods, you know, somebody comes and says, can I get clams? And we're out mm-hmm. once in a great while. They just walk away. There's nothing. What can you get?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how it started. He and his wonderful family, his wife Betty, his son Bob Jr., and Brenda, and Donna, Bobby's wife, they ran it for 30 years, and then they were selling, and I came along, 26, from Worcester, Mass., actually originally from, I was born in Flushing.
Oh, wow.
Not far from here. Having had a really sort of unsuspecting or not realizing that this was going to be a career, love for roadside joints and fish sandwiches and chocolate shakes, and I just was compelled to go to those kind of places all through college. I never went to the school cafeteria. I kept a list. I went to college in Maine. I went to Bowdoin. I kept a list of joints within 30 miles and would try to get friends to go with me, but most of the time I'd eat by myself in those places. And my path was sort of set, even though I didn't realize, and I got an opportunity to buy Bob's, and Bob took a liking to me. That was that. I worked there one day, and I went home and told my wife, I think I'm going to do this. And she said, really? And some of my friends said, of course you're going to do that. My family went, oh my God, what do we pay for an education for?
Did I hear you say you were 26 when this happened?
Yeah.
Wow. So, okay, back up, because okay. This is just really amazing. What were you studying at Bowdoin, and did you have a prior interest in hospitality, and how did this come to pass?
I was naturally an art history major.
Of course.
Yeah. I like to kind of qualify that as saying, but I was a really serious one.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved what I studied. I had a great professor, and I actually gave... I was worked with the head of the department and researched. I loved art and the political history side of it. But what was the rest of the question?
So where did the interest in hospitality come from? And did you have any background in hospitality when you decided to buy a roadside clam stand?
I did. It wasn't a very good resume. I got fired a lot. I shucked oysters down in Cape Cod at a musical theater place. I was a server in Booth Bay Harbor when I was a freshman in college, and worked at a ground round. They put me on the Friars once, and I totally messed up. They never let me back on there.
Wow.
Only to become like...
To run a couple of small fryers at Bob's.
Pretty good in the kitchen for about 15 years running the show.
Wow.
But I was a slow learner, and mm-hmm. I never thought hospitality was my thing, but I loved those places. So. Mm-hmm. And I did love to cook, and I still do, and I've learned a lot.
So you took a love for the roadside stand and jumped off a cliff with it, and
yes.
And here we are.
You know, the connection with the art history was the professor I worked with named Larry Lutchmanson. He was a Marxist art historian. And so there was something about Bob's being this working class place with incredibly down-to-earth values, highly anti-capitalist, and very little interest in making money. They wanted to feed the town of Kittery.
Mm-hmm.
Betty in particular, that was her main, you know, she felt really connected to her community. So there was just some huge redemption in working in this working class environment for me, where those values were being really lived out in a very innocent, unpretentious way. That was for me. I had already worked in, I went and worked in computers. I had been in the working world, and I just felt like such an outcast, like I didn't belong in this world. So here I could be in business, but in a very different way.
So for a very young person, you had a lot of different experiences kind of before you went into this. But I think knowing that you have the art history background, when you walk into Bob's Clam Hut, it's a beautiful space, and there is a lot of photography, and there's a lot of history up on the walls. Can you describe sort of the interior? So, of course, the exterior is a classic Maine clam hut, but very, very clean and beautiful, and beautiful signage. But describe the interior when you walk in.
Well, it's meant to feel like a porch, a seaside porch. And then it's, we didn't want to make it into an like a amusement park of itself or some kind of, but we wanted it to be a very unique experience. So there's no other, like, you can't mistake where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So there are photographs, old photographs of that Bob had, you know, when Bob's was brown and when he first opened, and the old car is sitting out front. And then when I first took over, there's a great shot of, Bob Jr.'s Citation, if you know that car. I loved his car. And Bob had a, it wasn't an LTD, Electra 225 he had. I think he really felt like he had made it at that point, and he had, in fact. And then we commissioned a local artist named Gordon Carlisle, who's a terrific artist, to do, he's sort of a pop surrealist-y, a lover of 50s kitsch, which is really where Bob's, you know, started in 1956, so that's its era. So he did a huge mural that included some pop characters from Gilligan's Island, plus the kitchen at Bob's. Mm-hmm. And we've done, actually, if you haven't been there recently, we did 7 other paintings that Gordon did that are just great, of vintage scenes from Bob's. One time when a moose crossed the parking lot, so he's got a picture of that. He's got a picture of Bob from the early days. Apparently Bob used to lie down on Route 1 to stop cars because it was that quiet.
Wow. This is not something I would recommend anytime between March and September, at least.
Right. So it's hard to imagine, but he would lie on Route 1 in his bathing suit, go for a dip in the creek, and cook people fried clams. And then they'd go next door to his mom's house because Helen Kraft was still there. And if you bought clams in the early days, you could go next door for a free piece of pie, which apparently was better than the clams. That's why people
came.
Wow. Yeah.
What were her classic pie flavors?
I don't
flavors?
Know. Never.
I'd love to do a little digging on that.
Yeah, probably still some folks around that I should probably ask Betty. I may have known at some point. I imagine blueberry.
I'm hoping for lemon. So I'm really intrigued, especially about Betty's philosophy of keeping it accessible. And I'm wondering if you know if there was any kind of, how did they go about doing that? Were there certain items that they kept on the menu because they were lower cost, or did they make efforts to streamline prices through kind of fluctuating markets? How did they maintain that level of accessibility?
They weren't really business people, and they were happy making what most people wouldn't have been happy making. So when I got there, the most popular dish was called a seafood basket, and 3 people can share a seafood basket. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a pound and a half of raw seafood, and mm-hmm. we still serve the same thing. It was $6.75, and it took me like a year and a half to even figure out how to run a food cost report. And when I did, I discovered it, the cost on it, just flat cost, not even paper, it was $7.09.
Wow.
So we lost, 34 cents every time we made one, and I would just make them all day long.
Uh-huh.
So that's how they did it.
Okay.
They just, they really did love and value the position they held in the community, and they were getting by, they made enough.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a mortgage, you know, they could, and they paid their family. It was just great humility, and that's a good life, even though, you know, you're not rolling in dough. You're rolling in feeling good. Betty on a Friday night, this is very intimidating when I first got there, there would be a lineup. People would pull into the parking lot, and she could see who was there, and she would start cooking their food before they ordered it.
Wow.
That's the kind of, and it was busy, and I learned those orders. It was intense.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, the line still can be pretty amazing in the high summer. So it's something really amazing that you've done is really managed to kind of preserve the history of Bob's Clam Hut while running it for how many years have you been the owner of Bob's?
It's 32 for me.
Okay, so 32 years you've kept it going. You know, I've been going there consistently for probably the last 25 almost years.
Wow.
And so I've seen it through, and I'd say like there may be some changes here and there. I saw Ben and Jerry's come and go. But for the most part, you know, it's the same experience and the food is the same. And, you know, I think I've seen it definitely grow and be more and more and more popular with people who are road tripping and making pilgrimages to the place. But how have you maintained kind of the ethos of what Bob and Betty created while adapting to, you know, modern dining and maybe modern demands for a menu for a place like this?
Sure. That's a great question. I mean, first of all, when you love something, and I do adore it, and I've always adored it, it's you put a lot of effort into that. And those values, I think, being front and center and conscious of those values and measuring our success against those values, that's really how you do it. I mean, I think your question is more the nuts and bolts. It's been, despite the news of it, it's been a fairly stable product line, clams, lobsters. Haddock has not been quite what it was lately, and we're starting to explore other routes there. And you mentioned Maine shrimp. That's been a little more problematic, but scallops have been really consistent. They're as good as ever, right? You know, especially during Maine scallop season. And so it developed. Bob had tremendous relationships with vendors, very loyal, like partners, and I really love that. I don't get into this kind of call, you know, send an email out to five people and take the one with the best price. I don't even want to talk about that. We just want to work with somebody. They're successful. We're successful. They know what we expect.
Mm-hmm.
We get really great service and more importantly, wonderful, wonderful product. We buy our seafood from what the best restaurants in the area buy. So one of the things about what we do is because frying food is sort of condescended to in the culinary world, we have an opportunity, and sometimes for good reason. People let their oil go bad. You know, people don't consider fry cooks really cooks. So we had this opportunity to be really different, and that really came from Bob, too. We're, like, obsessive fry cooks. I mean, the oil's got to be the right level. We throw it out long before anybody I've ever known. We recycle it, of course, but we don't generally filter it because I don't find that really, maybe makes the color better, but the oil's kind of spent being at a temperature for a while. We skim any of the crumbs off. And we have a very sophisticated cycle of how we fry the food, so it comes out incredibly clean. So that expertise, that kind of gourmet-level approach to fry cooking and lobster roll making and everything in a roadside joint is, it's kind of we were an early version of what food trucks are doing now, for instance, bringing real good culinary principles to street food, you know, Maine street food.
Yeah. one of our busier streets in the state of Maine, I would say. What do you feel, do you feel the effects of shortages of trained cooks? You know, something we talk a lot about that's affecting restaurants here in New York City, but I think also across the country, is it's really, really hard to hire cooks right now. Mm. And I'm wondering if, you know, being a seasonal business and sort of based on the high demand that you have on those busy days, have you had a hard time finding staff to cook, or has it been pretty consistent?
Well, Yes, of course we have. And having run other restaurants, I mentioned a place called Robert's Main Grill, which is a more, standard kind of full-service restaurant. And we have a bakery. We no longer have Robert's, but we have this bakery, Lil's.
Go to Lil's. It's in Kittery. Kittery Foreside. Go get a cruller. I sent
Thank you.
You.
See, the connection is the frying.
Oh.
The frying of the cruller. That's the link. And the fact that it's named after Lillian, who was our 25-year cashier. Wonderful lady. We have a couple of advantages that have really paid off for us in the hiring. One is we don't always love to hire experienced cooks because they think they know how to fry,
mm-hmm.
and almost always they don't. I've never really run into somebody that comes in that thinks they know how to fry. So unteaching things is really hard on learning. So we like to hire, our general manager been there since 1991. She's in her mid-40s, so she started at 16. And she learned the business, right? And she learned how to do it the way we do it. And there are quite a few others like that. And we have 10 and 20-year veterans. And so if we can train folks, and while fry cooking is takes skill, it's not as hard and as complex as putting a sauce together or sautéing. Mm-hmm. So we can train folks. So that gives us an edge there. And because we have very progressive philosophies and values, we have the five bottom line system, and we're open book management and profit sharing we've had for years, where people actually, not like a retirement profit sharing, equity, and at the end of the year, you see how we do, and you get a check for X amount, and it's lots, and just a lot of great systems like that, and a lot of inclusion. So, meaning the frontline staff really make big decisions about what we're doing and how we change things, and so that culture that has evolved, we're kind of become an employer of choice, I think. So we've done pretty well, and we seem to get by.
Awesome. Yeah. I'd love to spend more time and talk about the five bottom line and to talk about profit sharing as well. But I think this is something that we should come back to at a later time, because I think there are so many great models that, I think there's maybe a misconception that it's hard to be successful in the restaurant business while, being beneficial in the community. And I've just been hearing from a lot of restaurant owners recently about their successes with policies like this and with open bookkeeping that I think have been really, really remarkable. So I'm really glad to hear that's happening.
Sure. I know you want to come back to it. I just put in a plug in. I'm a Rock United Rays member. Part of the Rays is the High Road restaurant side of Rock United, and a big supporter of what they're trying to do. And
that's awesome.
Been for a while. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you. We're going to take a very quick commercial break, and we'll be back in a moment. And I'm excited to talk to you about some of your sustainability initiatives and some projects looking forward into the future. So we'll be right back. Thank you.
Think about what it takes to swim a coastline longer than the entire eastern seaboard and leap tall waterfalls in a single bound. What does it take to survive 200 feet deep in icy salt water? What would you be made of? Wild Alaska Seafood is made of tight muscle mass, long chain omega-3s, and incredible micronutrients. It matters where your food comes from. Experience the flavor of the fittest in every bite and enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. Ask for Alaska on the menu, grocery store, or smart device. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network on Tour. I'm your host, Katie Mosman-Wadler, and my guest today is Michael Landgarten, the owner of Bob's Clam Hut in Kittery, Maine. So, Michael, thank you. We were just talking about some of your employment practices and how you've maintained really historic business over a long duration of ownership, and you've got some really cool, relatively recent projects. You know, Bob's has always had, I think, a really good attitude towards sustainability. And at this point, you guys have some amazing initiatives going on in the Kittery location. So I'd love for you to tell us quickly about those. And then I'd like to talk about some of your future projects as well.
Sure. Yeah. We hooked up a few years ago with a group called Green Alliance, and they really started to educate us. And actually, one of the first things we decided recently was a misstep, because sometimes it can be really hard to figure out what's better for the environment, X or Y. So at that point, we were serving on all paper, and we switched to plastic baskets and low temp dishwashers, and started to do that kind of thing.
The plastic baskets, the reusable,
right, reusables,
like lined with a wax paper kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah. So less trash. And yeah. We thought, oh, that's good. And recently, we decided it wasn't so good, because it's plastic. Mm-hmm. It's not a good thing to manufacture. Some of them end up in the trash and, you know, virtually never decompose. And mm-hmm. there was a great composting vendor locally who we had used at the other restaurants. And so we've gone to all compostable paper products.
So that's interesting that the single use but compostable products were actually ultimately better than creating and eventually disposing right. of the plastic
petroleum-based mm-hmm. Manufacturing, making plastic, and then more often than we care to admit, I think, is the plastic would end up in the trash. Mm-hmm. We had staff going through trash bags trying to pull them all out. It was just a mess. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so the thing evolves. And then we added some solar panels on the roof, and restaurants are huge electrical users. So that only covered about 7% of our usage, and like 30 panels. So we bought a solar farm and put in another 310 panels, and now we're 100% solar, which feels great.
That's awesome. Yeah. Wow, I'm surprised that the roof just wasn't quite
close.
Cutting it.
Yeah. it was a little embarrassing, because people say, "Oh, that must cover a lot." I'm like, "No, it's 7%."
Wow,
right? But we bought the solar farm.
Amazing.
Yeah,
so cool, and a beautiful sunny spot to have it too.
Right. Yeah.
And you mentioned briefly earlier that you guys recycle the fryer oil. I imagine there's, literal tons of oil coming through.
Yeah.
Is that going to biodiesel, or how do you recycle that?
There's a variety of things they do. I hear it makes soap in some places, but mostly it's biofuels.
Cool.
That's correct.
So you have a partner that will come and collect
that? Vendor picks it up, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's been going on a long time, actually.
Okay.
That's even before it became pretty well known.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It used to be a market for it. Back when I bought Bob's from Bob, we used to get paid for the oil, and not so much anymore.
Oh, really?
It's pretty much just the service of picking it up.
Gotcha. Yeah. Are there people, I know that, especially kind of in the Seacoast area, I knew some people who had converted their cars to run
sure.
on fryer oil, kind of unrefined in the car wood process.
Right.
Are there people who want to pick up directly from you?
There are.
Do you entertain them?
Do you know Mark McElroy too? he's a buddy of mine that he got on it really early. He had like old Mercedes, and he was always wanted to come by and pick it up. And I said, sure, go ahead. And then his car stunk like used fryer, oil.
You can always spot those cars, or you can sniff out the cars because they're going down the road, and you're like, where's
it? It's like advertising for us, but it wasn't good. Once it got into the car, it didn't.
It's not quite as nice as the fresh clams and the fresh oil.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's really cool. So looking to the very near future from now, you are here in New York for something called Lobster Rumble with Tasting Table. Is that right?
Yes. Right.
So what's the Lobster Rumble? And tell us about your team and what you guys are doing tomorrow.
Oh, sure. It's Thursday, actually.
Oh, okay.
I hope. I could do it tomorrow, get it over with. That'd be great. We are one of 25 restaurants that have been selected. We're really honored to serve our lobster roll. Lobster roll's always been on the menu. Bob was doing it in 1956, so it didn't really take off as a phenomenon or a food that people really knew of until like 1990.
Really?
Rebecca Charles and over at Pearl Oyster Bar was the one who, she was on the cover of Gourmet or something, and the lobster roll started to be a thing. And we're just making our classic lobster rolls, nothing really ornate about ours, although I've certainly made them with tarragon and chives and et cetera, but ours is straight up beautiful, recent, you know, shucked. It'll be shucked today or tomorrow, actually, lobsters, mm-hmm. And a perfectly girdled bun. And we'll compete with these 24 other restaurants for the best lobster roll. I think they get about 1,200 people coming.
Wow.
It's in Greenpoint this time. We've been at it, well, Roberts, this other restaurant, that was also named after Bob, of course. People sometimes don't get the joke.
And Roberts was directly across the street from Bob's Clam Hut, yeah.
The idea was Bob put on some shoes and mm-hmm. maybe a shirt and went out to dinner. Maybe, right? Considered having a salad, but didn't really mm-hmm. do it. We competed a couple of years. We actually won the first time we were there,
Was
pretty
wild.
Yeah, I was out of my mind. It's kind of a scream.
It's an amazing lobster roll, and also the technique on the bun is nothing to sneeze at. Will you also be including the pickle? Because I think you guys have a great pickle.
We are bringing a pickle.
Good.
Yeah, a little extra bonus. Mm-hmm. The moose bouche from Bob's. And the team I'm bringing is with that general manager, Sherry Manson, mm-hmm. who started in 1991. I remember the day. And Brian Pajak, who's been there 15 years, a couple of managers, Cassie Swicklick and Tim Beal. So this long-timers, and the five of us are going to crank out 1,200 lobster roll tastes.
Just like that.
Just like that.
How do you do? Do you have a mini bun, or are you slicing them? How big is the taste?
The taste is going to be half a lobster roll, so
it's pretty big.
Pretty rich.
Yeah, pretty.
But cutting those things in thirds is just awkward.
Yeah, I gotcha. So
we have travel griddles and Kate's butter, which is just tremendous butter, local Maine, and Hellman's mayo.
Bring out the best.
Not ashamed.
Yeah,
can't beat it.
That's awesome.
There you go.
Oh, well, I'm very, very envious. I'm traveling to Vermont tomorrow, so
that's
I will not,
not
be able to eat too many lobster rolls, but hopefully we'll. I'll be thinking of you guys.
You know where to find us.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'll make a detour on my way home. So speaking of little short distance travel, you guys have a really exciting opening coming up in Portland. So this is going to be another location of Bob's Clam Hut. Same name?
Yes.
And how did this come to be? Because Portland is not so far, but it's a bit of a drive. Amazing food city. I think Seacoast, Portsmouth, Kittery, and Portland have always had really, really awesome food scenes. But, you know, Portland is very, very well known. So how long have you been kind of working on this, and what's the inspiration to open there as opposed to any other coastal cities?
Well, I'll start with your last question. Portland's, you know, the culinary capital of Maine. The Mid-Coast is also really a remarkable place with its history of back to the landers and Maine Organic Farmers and Growers, a Gardeners Association, and that really great food in Mid-Coast. But Portland is where the culinary epicenter and the conversation really starts there. And I love Portland. Been going there since I was in college. Played in bands there, actually, for years. And we were doing a pop-up, a Bob's pop-up at Oxbow, the great brewery, one night, and I saw this place that I'd noticed before on a very prominent corner in a up-and-coming neighborhood. So that means it's a little gritty, the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
There was a clam hut there, but it had gone out of business. And so it just tapped into what I had learned. I had been thinking about a second clam hut for many years, and just the right place just didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody once said, you can put one anywhere. And I thought, it's actually pretty tricky where a second Bob should go, because I'm not sure there should be a second Bob's.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't exactly tell you what it is. It was something about being a standalone building, because Bob's a standalone building. We didn't want to be like in a strip mall or something like that. We wanted to kind of maintain that feel. But it's different enough, it's urban enough, and kind of creative enough to tap into Bob's pioneering spirit in a way. So we're going into this neighborhood doing classic Main Street food. It's sort of a gateway spot on this street that's become really exciting with food. And we're doing it with, you know, we're saying it doesn't have to be fancy food, but it has to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we stand for. So it felt right. And I've done these other restaurants all along, and the Bob's folks, which is really the core of our company, have never really had a place to expand their ability, their careers. And so as soon as we said we're doing this, they were just jumping.
That's
and
awesome.
Excited to be in Portland.
Cool. So, yeah, I guess it's dangerous for you to travel because you might just spot a roadside place and have to buy it. But that sounds like a perfect location, and I'm excited to check that out. You know, just thinking about all the great brewing that's happening in Kittery and Portland, too.
Yeah.
Will there be any possibility of having a beer companion with the clam basket?
There really, this is, you know, Bob's Kittery has always been G-rated and mm-hmm. for no beer. We have ice cream. But Portland has beer.
All right.
We'll have beer, we'll have cans, we'll have, I think we're starting with lunch, I think, Main Beer Company.
Awesome. Oh,
and
love it.
Maybe Allagash White. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe Tributary. So a couple on tap and then a bunch in cans.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it's such a natural fried clams or scallops or anything and a beer. You know, we have a little patio, kind of beer garden-y patio. So it's good. And I think that Lil's connection was informative, too, because we helped to revive the neighborhood down in Kittery Foreside, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is some, you know, there's always got to be a give back quality to what Bob's does. So this was our saying, oh, let's go help this neighborhood and be part of this revival,
mm-hmm.
Rather than going, say, on Commercial Street, which is the waterfront, and just trying to cash in. So
right.
It's more of that spirit of helping.
I love that. So last question. Have you seen any kind of increase in demand for vegetarian options, or are you looking to expand any of the menu offerings in that direction, either in Portland or Kittery? Is this something that's changing as people are becoming more aware of vegetarian and vegan diets?
Right. Not so much. Yeah. I paid attention to that. I'm personally gluten-free. Dairy-free, you know, I cheat every so often, like I had the pizza.
I'm like, wait, you just had a pizza,
know.
Though.
I said, this is worth it.
This is totally
so
worth
I'm
it.
I'm going to pay for it. But, and we have gluten-free seafood at Bob's.
Mm-hmm.
We do gluten-free. But vegetarian, probably not.
Get a basket of fries.
You can't, right.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be all things to all people.
Yeah.
We certainly do that at the other, at Lil's, but I think Bob's is a New England seafood place. That's what we are.
I'm glad to hear that. I think it's you know, it's really the perfect example of its kind, and so excited to see the expansion, and really can't wait to check it out. And congratulations!
Thank you.
And break a leg at the Lobster Rumble.
Oh, appreciate that. I already feel like, you know, just being one of the 25 is, you know, that's winning.
That's
pretty
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you for making the time to come out to Roberta's today. I know you're just off the airplane, so welcome back to New York City, and thanks for joining us on Heritage Radio Network.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization, and Heritage Radio Network on Tour is supported by the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. If you would like to make a donation to help us with our operations, you can visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate. And thank you so much. We will be back with more episodes of HRN on Tour. Stay tuned later this summer. We will be traveling all around, and look for us at Feast Portland in September. We're very excited for this partnership. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you on Thursday with HRN Happy Hour. Take care.